This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Very best bits of today's show from Sunday, February the 28th. Of course, the very best bit of today's show is that I am back from holiday after 2 weeks. Well, that's good for me anyway, for no one else. Normally I do this with Shruti Rajendran, producer Shruti, but she's not here. Clearly got a better offer. Hasn't missed me after 2 weeks, so I am flying solo this morning. Here, then, is what's coming up on Bite Size today. We're going to start with a cracking interview with Naeem Madad of Gates Hospitality. We know that the new COVID rules and regulations for hospitality have been rolled over until Ramadan, about the end or the middle of April. Naeem has some forthright views as a restaurateur on what that means for his industry. Going to get the latest on Warren Buffett's profits increasing at his company Berkshire Hathaway. Some interesting views on the US economy as well from the 90-year-old billionaire investor. Going to get the thoughts of Emirates NBD as well on the latest in the US in terms of the economy and the Biden stimulus bill. We're going to touch on Zoom for fatigue. More on that on the show tomorrow. And finally, travel and tourism into Africa. It's booming if you're super rich and you can afford a private jet and your own private villa. We're going to hear from Deborah Kallmeyer of the boutique travel agency Raw Africa. She's been speaking to Tom. All of that to come. First up, though, here is Serena with the top stories.
Ask Serena.
Morning, Serena.
Morning, guys.
Very quickly, before we get onto those COVID safety guidelines, just give us a quick update on the numbers, please.
So after more than 185,000 tests were conducted across the UAE yesterday, they announced 3,434 new cases of COVID-19 in the Emirates. They also announced 2,171 recoveries, 15 fatalities, and so currently active cases stand 7,673. It's actually gone up since the day prior, where we were at 6,425.
Which is why Dubai and other Emirates are extending a number of COVID-19 safety guidelines. So what do we know, Serena?
So with Dubai, the safety measures that were introduced at the start of February, they were due to end today. They have been extended until the start of Ramadan, mid-April, we're talking. So officials said at the time, do be prepared for measures to possibly be extended. Because obviously it's an ever-evolving situation with COVID-19, so they're constantly monitoring what's happening here as well as abroad. So Dubai's Supreme Committee of Crisis and Disaster Management, they said the decision is based on how effective the rules have been so far for the month of February, but also recommendations from frontline authorities as well. So a reminder of what is remaining in place, just so that you obviously are fully aware. Indoor seating venues are still at 50% capacity. So that's your cinemas, your entertainment and sports venues, malls, hotels, swimming pools and hotel beaches, 70% capacity cap there. Pubs and bars are still closed, still no live entertainment. Restaurants and cafes should shut by 1 a.m. in the morning. Just a reminder with regards to when you're booking at a restaurant, it's 7 per table in a restaurant and 4 per table in a cafe. Gatherings at home, no more than 10, and it should only be immediate family members as well.
Right then. Let's look at the economic impact of this. We've been speaking to Shadi Shah Al-Borna. He's with the economics team at Emirates NBD. This is his take on it.
Well, businesses in the Emirates have been operating under the framework of the current restrictions with expectations that those potentially could be extended as the COVID-19 situation remains in flux. So we expect the impact to be relatively muted. The focus right now is on the successful rollout of the vaccination program, which so far has been fast and effective, to allow the economy to normalize under safer health conditions.
The vaccination program, economically, says Shadi Shah Al-Borna, is the key. Have you got the latest numbers on vaccines, Serena? What can you tell us?
We've crossed the 6 million mark. More than 6 million doses have been administered. And over last week, from the last presser, they were announcing that we are getting very close to target, because obviously we want 50% of the population inoculated before April 1st. We're more than 44% currently. And so I think it was roughly more than 3 million people have been fully vaccinated in the country at present. So that's out of the more than 9 million people here in the UAE. So we are reaching that point. So I think obviously once we hit target, then we'll probably hopefully see you know, a domino effect with regards to with transmission rate and cases being revealed every day.
And the magical herd immunity that exactly. everyone is hoping for. Very quickly on vaccines, you mentioned in the headlines that another one has been approved in the United States. And this is a biggie, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's a one-shot dose. It's the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine. US regulators have formally approved it. This is the third jab that's been authorized in the country because they've got the Pfizer, BioNTech and the Moderna. Trials found the J&J vaccine prevented serious illness and was 66% effective overall when moderate cases were included. So basically, the companies agreed to provide the United States with 100 million doses by the end of June, but first doses could be available to the US public as early as next week. The UK, EU and Canada, they've also ordered doses, and 500 million doses have also been ordered through the COVAX scheme with the WHO to supply to poorer nations as well. But again, this can be stored at regular refrigerated temperatures. And again, it is only just that one jab.
And what do we know about the status of the vaccine supplies that we're getting here in the UAE? I followed this from a distance last week and followed some of the updates on the ARN News Centre. The number of vaccinations dipped quite sharply at one point, but then leapt back up. What can you tell us, Serena?
So with regard, obviously, with the Pfizer, we've already had Dubai Health Authorities. They've explained that we've had more doses arrive in the country for distribution. With regards to the dip, we did have a few officials come on to not just the business breakfast, but also afternoons with Helen as well. And they were just specifying that you've got that current campaign at the moment targeting the elderly and those with chronic conditions. So anybody who was looking for that first vaccine appointment wasn't you not actually eligible to get that at the moment. It's only second doses and the priority grouping. But currently, yep, we're still at more than 6 million doses have been provided across the country so far.
We've got a number of questions coming in, haven't we, Tom? You've been looking at some of these. For example, someone says, I've had both vaccines. To go to Abu Dhabi, how often do I need to get a PCR test?
So if you've already been vaccinated, there you've got two options. So either if you're, because in order to cross into Abu Dhabi, you have to show your results for a PCR or DPI test through the Al Hosn app. It won't be accepted as a text message or paper printout. So in regards to being vaccinated, you can keep an icon on the Al Hosn app, which shows, identifies you as a vaccinated person. And to keep that icon, you've got to get a regular PCR test every week. So what happens is to get that icon, after you've had your second dose, wait 28 days, take a PCR test, and your Al Hosn app should be updated with that relevant icon. Present this when crossing over into Abu Dhabi. You can take the emergency lane. You don't actually need to take a PCR or DPI test as long as you've got that active icon. Otherwise, you need a PCR test that's valid for 48 hours. DPI laser test, the results are valid for 24 hours. And with the DPI, it's just important to note you can't actually take one after the other. You can't do it back to back. You have to break it up with a PCR test. Did I answer the question?
You did indeed. But actually, a lot of questions were coming in over the weekend, weren't they, on social media? Brandy, you were looking at these. Serena, I know you were as well, about antibodies, an antibody test and people getting vaccinated but not getting antibodies. What's the story there?
I'm going to leave the science up to the Serena on that one.
Wait, what?
No. We had a number of questions coming in over the weekend, people writing in. I think it was on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, yeah, saying, I've had vaccines, but I haven't got antibodies. Do we know anything about that?
No, I think, obviously, personally, I definitely feel you need a medical professional or somebody from one of the health authorities to comment on this, because I definitely, this is not my, COVID's my field of expertise, but anyway, so I feel that if you get a professional, and I know you guys will definitely be having that, it's a regular thing, you've had the Dubai Health Authority on a couple of times, but of course, antibodies, we are fully aware, once you've had the vaccine, you wait a certain period of time, antibodies tests can actually pick up the level of antibodies created from the vaccine to protect you from COVID-19. I do believe there. One thing that I am sure about is that there does need to be a relevant gap between that second dose and when you take the antibodies test. It's not something you should do immediately after getting that second jab. There needs to be a decent amount of time in between the two.
Finally, talk to me about Lady Gaga.
Wow. Okay. So Lady Gaga's been reunited with her dogs, who were stolen in a very violent incident. Her dog walker was out with them. He had three of them. He's 30 years old, Ryan Fisher. He was approached and shot in the chest. Two of the dogs were stolen in the process, Koji and Gustav. It all happened just before the weekend. Gaga was filming a movie in Rome when they were taken in LA, but she put out a public appeal on her socials, basically just offering a reward of $500,000 for their safe return and just basically no questions asked, so to speak. Both dogs were turned over to police on Friday. A woman who authorities have not publicly identified brought the dogs to an LAPD station unharmed, turned over to the musician's representatives. Ryan's stable and doing well, but they're still looking for the two men that they're investigating from CCTV footage.
It's drama. Really
yes, I know.
So many questions about that one. It's really Kelly. Thanks very much indeed.
More details on the Aaron News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
So what did we learn over the weekend? Well, we learned that Dubai has announced the extension of COVID-19 safety measures until the start of Ramadan in mid-April to curb the spread of coronavirus. Dubai's Supreme Committee of Crisis and Disaster Management said the decision is based on the effectiveness of the rules introduced in February, recommendations of frontline authorities and the evolving COVID-19 situation. So who does this affect? Indoor venues, cinemas, entertainment, sports venues, all operating or will continue to operate at 50% maximum capacity. Similar for shopping malls, hotel establishments, etc. Restaurants and cafes required to close by 1 a.m. Last orders at 12. Pubs and bars will remain closed. What impact will this have? What ripple effect will it have on the hospitality industry? Let's ask one of the leaders of hospitality, the chief executive and the founder of Gates Hospitality, the purveyors of great brands across the UAE. Naeem Madad joins us live on the line. Morning, Naeem.
G'day, Tom.
G'day to you, my friend. OK, obviously, you've had a couple of days to digest the information. Talk to me about the impact this will have moving forward for not just your venues, but venues in general.
It takes a couple more than days to digest such big decisions. Nonetheless, I think just to put it simply, what we've been asked to do, or extension on what we've been doing, is keeping 50% of the business closed. Mm. That's clarity. That's how clear I can be, which, again, we have supported all along and will continue on supporting because we do understand the consequences that these parameters and these decisions bring to the humankind and controlling the pandemic. Nonetheless, Tom, what I'd like to talk about this morning is what comes along with doing such exercise and what cost for our economy and what cost for our businesses. And this is where we are looking at the authorities, we are looking at government industries, we are looking at financial institutions saying, okay, we're doing our part, what are you guys doing for the industry? Mm. And that's a big question that I have.
Because you're
in order for us to be able...
Sorry, Naeem, because your business models, I'm assuming, were not set out at 50% capacity, were they?
Absolutely not. There's no business set up on 50% projections, revenues, or cost factor. Otherwise, it wouldn't be what the business is.
Hmm.
Oh, how do we support the business moving forward, and how do we make sure that we can sustain making sure that there is a light at the end of the tunnel?
In terms of that, what support would be appreciated? Are we talking rents here? Are we talking stimulus packages? How would it work?
From globally, we're fortunate we operate in multiple parts of the globe. And what we have seen in other parts, there's been certain capital injection. There's been certain caps on rents, caps on conducting business, whether it's your trade license, your liquor license, your visa costs. This is what we're looking at. And this is where I believe a lot of these bodies should be involved in order to shoulder some of the pain and make sure that at the end of the process, everyone breaks even rather than certain industries and certain sectors shoulder 99% and others just cruise along.
And is there,
that's all we're asking for.
Is there also the potential as well to look at alleviating costs elsewhere? I mean, we spoke to entertainers recently after the initial announcement of the ban on entertainment, and they were saying that they just all renewed their licences at the beginning of the year. Is that something that we could look at in terms of cost of visas, cost of licences, etc.?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I made reference to earlier, I think this is what authorities should be looking at, saying, how do we make sure that these businesses can sustain these damages that are inheriting based on these decisions? And again, we should be looking at how do we make sure that the mental wellness is taken care of, because it's mentally exhausting, Tom, to be doing what we're going through. And it's been prolonging now, 15 months. And we keep saying, yes, it's getting better, but there's only so much mental stability, mental wellness, mental strength that you can shoulder. So we need everybody to chip in and help the business, because at the end of the day, if we look at markets that aren't supporting our investments, we'll start exploring other markets where we can see longevity and the good and the bad and the ugly. We need to be together, not on our own, when it suits certain parties.
We have heard that obviously these latest regulations will take us up to Ramadan. Obviously, we are then sort of, well, not a million miles away from summer as well. Is that a concern for you, Naeem, seasoned a professional in the industry here? Or will summer be a bounce back ability period for the UAE hospitality sector?
Again, summer, I think, with the limitation of travel, will be a positive thing for us. People will stay on the ground locally, so we will do better than what typically we do. But what happens also with summer, Tom, is you're losing all of your outside spaces, which I think people now feel a lot more at ease sitting outside, because they know they're well spread out, they're away from the next table and so forth, even though with the limitations on the inside, with the outside, people feel a lot more comfortable. So sadly, it'll be a double whammy soon, because you will lose 50% on the inside with your capacity, and you're losing the outside by sheer weather implications.
In terms of people in the industry as well, there's been a call that hospitality staff should be recognised as frontline workers. Do you concur?
100%. Look, again, what we don't talk about is, yes, 50% of the inside of the dining room. What happens to the kitchen? We still have the same amount of people that can only so much physically distance. The stove and the griddle and the burner, they're all on top of one another, because we utilize these spaces extremely efficiently when it comes to design. So we should be transparent, and we should be looking at every aspect that may be impacting the humankind, and not only what suits the PR story and what suits the naked eye.
It's interesting you mentioned about perceptions there, because a lot of people will have tried to book a table this weekend and been told that they're fully booked at the moment. There is a perception that hospitality is doing well, but is that a misguided perception because of the capacities you're working under?
Absolutely, based on the capacity. I can assure you, any restaurant, and fortunately I have some in my own portfolio that typically you can't get a table without booking ahead a week or so, we have not had this problem based on volume. We've had this problem based on limitations and capacity restrictions, nothing else. And frankly, again, you can't ask people to give you the table back in 2 hours, because typically people turn up, even if they book at 7, they turn up at 7:30, and there is very little you can do about it. And we've tried bookings, we've tried deposits, we've tried all of these tricks in the industry to support our business. Nonetheless, it doesn't work. If you start imposing these limitations on your guests, then they go elsewhere. As simple as that.
Naeem, I really appreciate your time this morning. Naeem Haddad is the Chief Executive and Founder of Gates Hospitality. Appreciate your time, appreciate your honesty as well. The frustrations of the hospitality industry are all too obvious at the moment. Thank you very much indeed to whoever just texted in. Finally, someone saying it like it is, saying what all the SMEs who are not a clinic or an FMCG are feeling. Bravo to you, Naeem. Thanks very much indeed for your thoughts.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's get some more detail on that top story now. The US House of Representatives has passed President Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus package. This is what the president had to say.
We have no time to waste. If we act now, decisively, quickly, and boldly, we can finally get ahead of this virus. We can finally get our economy moving again. And the people of this country have suffered far too much for too long. We need to relieve that suffering. The American Rescue Plan does just that. It relieves the suffering. and it's time to act.
One man who says it's much needed is Bernie Sanders. He's taken off his mittens that made him famous at Biden's inauguration, picked up his calculator. He's been crunching the numbers.
Walmart is, I think, the poster child. This is a family that is incredibly wealthy. One of their owners spends zillions of dollars on antique cars. They got mansions. They have all kinds of art collections. But somehow or another, they can't pay their starting wage at more than 11 bucks an hour. Same thing for Burger King. Same thing for McDonald's. Half of our people are living paycheck to paycheck. Their car breaks down. They're in serious financial trouble. Millions of people are working for starvation wages. Minimum wage today nationally is $7.25 an hour. And to my mind, and people could disagree with me if they want, that is a starvation wage.
It's Bernie Sanders taking it. Brandy, you've been putting the questions to Shadi Arbono, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. We've been trying to find out what's going on and what it could mean for us with our friendly Emirates MBD economist, because there's a knock-on effect, isn't there? Not just for the US economy, but for the rest of the world as well.
This is what Shadi Arbono had to say.
Well, certainly a significant first legislative win by President Joe Biden with the passing of the $1.9 trillion relief package early Saturday. Now, the plan would pay for vaccines, medical supplies, and send a new round of aid to households. This will include about $1,400 in direct payments to individuals, $400 per week of federal unemployment benefits through August 19, and help for paying rents and home mortgages for those facing difficulties during the pandemic.
Shadi Arbono of Emirates MBD on one of our top US stories, the $1.9 trillion stimulus plan. Another one of our top US stories is about Zoom.
Zoom, 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 Zoom. I want you in my room. Let's spend the day together until everyone's fed. Zoom, 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 Zoom. I'm making friends on Zoom. In this self-isolation, my social life will boom.
Or not, as the case may be. A study out from Stanford, the Virtual Human Interaction Lab, no less, that has just been published, says that it's not your imagination. Zoom calls are knackering. They say that there are four reasons that doing a lot of video chat creates what is being called Zoom fatigue, although they do stress that other platforms are available. But Zoom is the one that has become the noun, as it were.
Tom, Zoom fatigue, have you got it? Is it real or is it just psychobabble nonsense?
I don't get it. I'm looking at this report and I mean I think fatigue is a thing. I think Zoom fatigue, COVID fatigue are things. I think we're all a little bit, we've got over the novelty value of working from home, of video conferencing, etc. Now it's become a sort of everyday norm. I think it's starting to bite a bit. Some of this language that they use, though, because the causes of Zoom fatigue include excessive amounts of close-up eye gaze. Also, increased self-evaluation from staring at video of oneself. So basically, it's the mirror effect, isn't it? We're not happy with looking at our own faces.
There's four reasons.
Instagram?
Or four things that they say are causing Zoom fatigue. Number one is the fact that you are making eye contact with a lot of people because you're staring into the camera, they're staring into the camera. And they say that in real life that just doesn't happen so much. You're not making eye contact with people apart from your nearest and dearest in such an intense way. Number two, you are constantly looking at yourself and thinking, oh God, am I looking, do you know what I mean, and sort of fussing around a bit and checking your angle and seeing chins that you didn't know were there and all the rest of it, which is making us all very self-conscious. Number three, you're not standing up and moving around, which is apparently how we normally talk. You are kind of fixed because, you know, you fix your head position, you make sure you're framed properly and you don't move from that, and that's not normal. Fourthly, they reckon that the cognitive load is higher. And by cognitive load, they mean that you're trying to interpret what the other person actually means because you don't have the same body language cues. You know what it's like when someone says something you agree with on Zoom and everyone goes and gives them a big cheesy thumbs up? We don't do that in day to, well, the majority of us don't do that in day-to-day life. So they say you're having to constantly think and burn, and I quote, mental calories in order to figure out how you're supposed to react to stuff and what people really mean.
Psychobabble nonsense.
You're shaking your head. You're not having it, are you?
I'm not having it, no. I think it's nonsense. I mean, it's needs must at the moment, yeah, if people had to. But, and it's exactly the same with with meetings, in-person meetings. People get stressed with in-person meetings, don't they? Sweaty palms.
Yeah, I don't know. I do think it's different. I do think it's different because I do. I mean, we don't have many at all, do we? But even when it's just talking to friends and family or chats about different events that we might be hosting or whatever, I do think you come off them a bit tireder than you do off your normal meeting.
Yeah, we're not a good sample here because we don't do many of them. We don't work in management. We've been coming to work every day, literally, during the pandemic and had relative normality. Tom, you've been going to Dubai One TV, haven't you, most days? So we do not have back-to-back Zoom meetings. And I'm very grateful for it.
You just turn the camera off. You don't have to have the screen on, do you? You just do the blank screen thing.
It depends who you're working with and what kind of meeting you're having. You can't always do that.
Oh, I know all the tricks now. Now my son's taught me all of them, you know, about how you can seem to be in the room but not in the room.
Really?
Yeah. It's all sorts going on.
And the kids have figured this one out first.
Yeah, yeah. Have to be in the class or not in the class.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
Yeah, let's talk travel and the travel trends at the moment. Already been mentioned in the show this morning that a lot of organisations looking at the trends developing at the moment. A lot of focus on the continent of Africa at the moment and that opening up for travel moving forward. One way of certainly trying to placate one's wanderlust and inability to travel very far at the moment is, of course, to sit at home and watch classic travel films and, of course, scenes that make you want to travel like this. Iconic biplane scene from Out of Africa, which, will set anybody on their way of trying to get onto their own plane anytime soon. Well, one person who is trying to do that, but with very much a difference at the moment, is our next guest, somebody who knows the continent of Africa all too well. Her and her team have been curating, designing and delivering highly refined travel experiences that match people to places for many years. She's been recognised for those services with a number of awards, including Travel and Leisure's Best Awards 2018, 2019, 2020, Conde Nast's Top Travel Specialist over 4 years. And recently, she's been included in Conde Nast's 30 Most Powerful Women in Travel back in 2019. It's an absolute pleasure to be joined on the line by the CEO and founder of Raw Africa, and Deborah Kalmeyer, who joins us this morning. Deborah, good morning to you.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're really well. Thank you so much indeed for joining us. Obviously, you have your finger very much on the pulse, not just of travel to Africa, but worldwide. What are the trends at the moment in the current COVID crisis climate?
I think, Tom, people are moving slower and staying longer. We're certainly seeing families, you know, sort of want to place themselves in private villas, exclusive use of properties, sometimes private planes, but looking to be out in the wild, wide open spaces away from cities and congested sort of heavy footfall. So, you know, I think people are looking for wellness, they're looking for restoration, reconnection. You know, there's definitely a desire to reconnect with oneself, with one's family. And I think being out in Africa in the wild open spaces really provides that.
Obviously, we bemoan the fact that a lot of us can't get on a plane readily at the moment and travel that readily. But do we also need to spare a thought for those that have been affected, all the individuals, the organisations, specifically in a continent like Africa, who have suffered so heavily because of COVID-19?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've lost over 12.4 million jobs in tourism in Africa. That's estimated to be, say, possibly 15 million by the end of this year if things don't improve. So we really, really are dependent on international travelers to prop up the ecotourism model in Africa. You know, obviously hotels and airlines are sort of at the forefront of what we see as the general public in terms of suffering. But there are hundreds and thousands of lives dependent on tourism that we don't think about. Porters, anti-poachers, you know, drivers, rangers, all those people that are fighting not only for their survival like we are, but also to protect these beautiful beautiful wild spaces, so we've got something to go back to.
What are, Deborah, again, you have your, you've got your ear to the ground when it comes to this. What's the biggest fear at the moment for your clients? What's preventing people from travelling?
I think the unknown, you know, things are changing all the time. They're changing while people are traveling, you know, whether it's PCR test requirements or all sorts of different re-entry things. So, you know, I think the best thing anyone could do is work with a specialist who's got boots on the ground, who can manage all those changes for you. But look, you know, I've done 8 international long-haul flights since November, and I felt perfectly safe, you know, getting on beautiful airlines like Emirates, who've taken such good care in putting protocols in places and to make people feel safe. I mean, it's doable. It is doable. But yes, there is a fear to get over. And if you travel with, you know, a bit of confidence and a bit of flexibility, there's certainly people out there who can make it happen for you.
Your tours and all the tours put together by Roar Africa are, of course, very personalised, they're very bespoke, they're very customised. You spend a lot of time over in New York, a lot of time over in Africa. So what brings you to Dubai? You mentioned Emirates there as well. I understand there's a little bit of a tie-up, is that right?
There is. Certainly my favourite airline, but I designed a trip called The Greatest Safari on Earth on the Emirates Executive Private Jet. I also think it's now the safest safari on Earth, and we are going to be taking 10 guests to Africa's 4 most iconic destinations, Victoria Falls, Botswana, Great Migration in Kenya, and the gorillas. It's a 12-day trip for those wanting to do all of Africa in one fell swoop, and we're leaving in August, so that's why I'm here in Dubai.
Book your places now. In terms of the demands and in terms of bespoke travel, I mean, obviously luxury travel is something that so many people aspire to, but what are the demands at the moment being put upon you? Has the trends within luxury travel, within bespoke travel, also changed?
Yeah, I think definitely the sort of degree of difficulty of our job of actually moving people has become incredibly intense. We're having to know just so much more. We're having to care in a much deeper way in terms of safety and precaution. And we're having to manage a fear factor. But, you know, there are great people who are brave and bold, who are itching to get out there. And as I said earlier, wanting to get into the wild open spaces of Africa. So we're doing it. You know, I've got a team of little Navy SEALs behind me working every minute of the day to get people safely and, into Africa and back out again.
Why, Deborah, is it important for us when we can travel again safely? Why is it important for us to do that?
I think, you know, we've got to understand that saving wildlife is not just a moral obligation anymore, but a responsibility for all of us from a public health perspective and from a financial standpoint. Don't forget, we're all in this situation today because of the illegal trade of wildlife. That's where COVID originated from. So we have to pay attention and we have to make positive changes now.
And in terms of, I mean, we've sort of looked at it from a bespoke point of view, and again, something that you very much specialise in. Is that going to have an impact? Is the actions of individuals, of smaller groups as well, is also going to have as much of an impact as the mass migration of mass travel?
I think it's going to go more and more in that direction, and that people are going to be more conscious of how they travel, what they do when they go there. As I said, maybe go slower, and it's not just about ticking boxes and gathering places, but actually, you know, really immersing themselves and understanding cultures and crossing barriers so that we can all be more empathetic and caring to how we all live on this planet together.
Just finally, Deborah, and I understand that you're on your travels again very shortly, but I was just going through a few of the videos on your Roar Africa website ahead of this interview. The biplane in your videos bears a striking similarity to the one that we just heard in Out of Africa.
It is. It is the one. That plane lives at a property called Segera in Kenya, and it was purchased by the owner, and it's the original plane from Out of Africa. And actually, if you book and come and stay there, we can organise a trip for you in that actual plane.
Sign us up. Deborah, absolutely lovely to chat with you. Thank you so much indeed for your time this morning. All the best with the new tours. It's Roar Africa who are looking to make a difference, not just to you and your wanderlust and travel, but also to the communities that they impact in the continent of Africa. Our thanks to the CEO and founder of Roar Africa, Deborah Kelmare, joining us live on the line.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.